all here, guys. So the point of this session today is for you to ask questions and for us to answer them. So anything kind of goes. We have some submitted earlier. They always get higher priority because they're organised and they've given us a chance to have a look at them. So we'll answer those first. We've got four, so nothing too onerous. And then, by all means, at any point, just type into the question box what your question is. It can be any kind of question. There's no question. There's no silly question. There's only silly people asking questions. So just keep that in mind so you're not intimidated. I think that's a funny joke anyway.
Definitely lots of silliness going on over here, I'll tell you that. Hey, look, you know what? If you have a question, you didn't have the chance, if you weren't one of the organized ones, as Richard says, then go ahead and put your question into the chat box, and if we have time, we'll be able to answer it. You know, I'm sure a lot of your questions might deal with, you know, maybe a conversation you're having about a proposal or how to find more clients, whatever, you name it, drop that in there. You have our undivided attention for the next 60 minutes. So let's get into it, Richard. I pulled up a question here from longtime Academy member Samuel Corchado from, if I'm going to scratch my head, I think Puerto Rico, I think is where Samuel is located. He asks a great question here. He's on checking with you whether my list of pains the architect addresses seems correct and any suggestions you may add. And then he says tight spaces, improper sizing of spaces, poorly proportioned spaces, lack of order, unenriching spatial sequence, lack of natural illumination and or ventilation, poor utilization of the site, poor responsiveness to the environmental conditions at the site. This sounds like the grades off of my ARE exam. Samuel, did they give that to you? Just kidding. Poor, or maybe back from school, you know, the whole site analysis class. Poor integration of interior and exterior spaces or environments. Building does not portray the correct image to the public. Need more spirituality in your spaces. Materials and finishes portray an improper image or feeling. Building does not reflect your values, beliefs, and ideas. Lack of flexibility in the structure. So, Richard, I'll let you take a crack at this one. Look, when you answer this, also give us some background on why, for those members who may be kind of new to marketing, why do we care about the pains that architects address, and then go ahead and answer Samuel's question.
Okay.
Unless you want me to answer.
Right. Look, this. I'm so pleased you asked this question, Samuel. Samuel. How do you pronounce it, Sam? Samuel?
Samuel.
Samuel.
You did just fine.
Okay. So, great question. Great question. And the answer is no. No, no, no. No, no, no. No, 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 no. But it's a great question, right? And as Enoch quite rightly said, why do we want to talk about pains? Why is Samuel bringing up the question of pain? It's such a great question, right? And I'll explain why what you've got here is wrong, but I'll tell you how very quickly to get it right. So let's look at pain. Why talk about pain? Well, the reason we do that is in the Architect Marketing Institute, in our little world here, we understand the psychology behind people. And until you understand the psychology, it's hard to understand anything. We're just looking on the surface. So as a, you know, Architect Marketing Institute experts or marketers, we need to peel the onion. You know the onion, right? You have an onion and you peel back a layer, and you peel back another layer, and you peel back another layer, right? And most people never peel back any layers at all. They just go for the superficial layer and take it as it is. But because we are almost psychologists as marketers, we peel back layers to get down lower. So what do I mean? Well, what really drives people is not tight spaces, right? It's people do things for one or two reasons, okay? They either do things to avoid pain, and I'm talking extreme levels of motivation, or to gain pleasure. At a very basic level, that's all we're trying to do, gain pleasure or avoid pain. Everything else kind of sits in the middle. So if you had a scale of minus 10 to plus 10, let's say gaining pleasure, the most pleasure would be plus 10. I will do stuff, I will spend money to get that. I will spend money, if I have a passion for, I don't know, fishing, I might spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get the right fishing gear, maybe a boat, maybe holidays to take me fishing, right? I'll spend big money. If I'm trying to avoid pain, we're talking about minus 10. And I will spend, let's say I could go to jail. I'll spend tens of thousands of dollars to avoid going to jail. I'll spend $10,000 on something which is going to be very painful for me. Now, how does that work with what you're talking about? We've got to move people away from the bit in the middle, because the bit in the middle is the procrastination zone where, you know, it's not too warm, it's not too cold, it's kind of okay. Maybe I'd like, you know, a better space. Maybe our current space is kind of a bit uncomfortable. We should do something about it. But until you get people up to about 7, 8, 9, 10, either to want to get something really cool or avoid something really bad, until you get into the extreme ends, they're probably not going to spend huge amounts of money or not do anything. They're in the middle zone, right? So that's why we talk about, you know, pain and pleasure, right? Make sense? Okay, so with what we've got here from Samuel, he's going in the right direction. He's trying to find the pain points, and he's listed a whole lot of things. The only problem with what he's got here is he's sort of gone one layer below on the onion. And what I'd like him to do, and you guys to do, is go deeper than that. So when we say tight spaces, that's kind of the thing that's starting to cause some problem. But you need to go deep. You need to peel another level and find out why is the tight space causing you problem. Okay, it's the level below this and maybe the level below that. So what is it about the tight space that's causing you discomfort? And then they will give you an answer, right? So you're now one layer deeper. And then you might say, why is that a problem to you? And they'll go one layer deeper again, right? Now you've got their problem. Now you've got their pains. Because tight spaces isn't a pain. It's the thing... It's the impact that the tight space has on their life which is causing the pain. So you've just got to, all these things are great questions. They're great ways to get on the surface, and they're great ways to go under and down, but you've got to ask the why. And the trick is, once they start giving you emotional answers, so let me get tight. Okay, so why, Richard, tight spaces? Well, we don't have a lot of room for, you know, we can live in the house fine, but when it comes to having people around for Thanksgiving and Christmas and things like that, we really can't host things at our house. Oh, okay, that's another level deeper. Why is that a problem? Well, we don't feel we're contributing to the rest of our extended family, and that, you know, we're always going to other people's houses, and personally I find it embarrassing that we can't have people here. We can only have two or three people here. And what impact's that having? Well, I just feel bad. I just feel I'm not pulling my weight as a family member, right? Bad example, but that's the part. There's more pain there than tight space, okay? So all of these things are good starting points for you to go deeper, Samuel. And if you use them as reasons to go deeper, you'll end up with some very emotional answers. And as you take people deeper and deeper into the onion, not only will they give you more emotional answers, they'll start feeling those answers even more. So if they started off at, let's say, minus five when they're talking about it, by you digging deeper and asking deeper and deeper questions, you'll take them down to a 8, 9, or 10 because they're talking about it. And as they talk about it, they feel it more. And as they feel it, their motivation level goes up. And as their motivation level goes up, their ability to make decisions goes up. They get more decisive. And as their ability to make decisions goes up, everything moves faster. Samuel.
All right. You nailed it. Thanks, Richard. So if anyone has any additional follow-up on that, feel free to ask. Samuel, thanks for putting that question in.
It is a great question because it's at the heart of you know, everything we're trying to do is be more psychological. So great question.
It really is. Hey, look, here's a really great question from Philip. If anyone's ever had the opportunity, the challenge, or the pleasure of making cold contact or even warm contacts, in this case, to someone, this one's kind of a cool little story, and this is good stuff here. So I'm sure we'll get some good insights from this. I'll go ahead and read this out. Richard, sound good?
Yeah, great.
All right. After sending an email, info, and hard copy newsletter, including our car dealership Monkey Fist and LCC, I've made a call to a project manager of a large automotive group in Sydney. He was pointed to me by a builder in Sydney specialized in commercial and automotive buildings I had established previously a good relationship with. As soon as I tried to get some rapport and told him that we would like to get him help with design, having an expertise in automotive design, He started immediately quite arrogant and intolerant, raging, how much do you get paid per hour? Thinking probably to ask what is our hourly rate, that he had no intention to pay for our traveling costs, etc. I'm just going to see if Philip is on here. Philip, I'm going to unmute your line. Hopefully, if you do have a mic, you can just tell us the rest of the story if you want to, or I can continue to read it, but I think it'd be better coming from you. Give us some background. Philip, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah. We can. Yep, we sure can.
Look, it's 5 in the morning in WA, so Western Australia. I won't be of much help, but I can try a few things. Look, I've tried to establish a good relationship with the builder, which is East Coast the other way, because there was a lot of workload there, which is not true with WA where I am now. We're pretty bad with the economy at the moment. I've tried through a builder, and I thought it was quite a good relation. Second step was to do is use a builder as a kind of a remote office to get some jobs over east. What is the issue is the intention of the call was only to establish just maybe 5 minutes kind of a rapport with that project manager, so he knows who I am and get a little bit of attention about me. The builder was indicating that there was a big job, like 50 million plus BMW dealership going on, and there might be some bad relations with an architect who is trying to leave that relation, and they are trying to find someone else to do some work. And I did ring that project manager who afterwards I did realize by his name that he was working for some company, large corporation, and they kind of told me that he was very hard or heavy to work with. So he basically changed the job, get to another corporation. Then we realized in a minute that I was talking to him. That made me also a little bit silent, and I realized he was kind of he had something in back of his mind, kind of I think that's why he was behaving like unfriendly to an architect calling him. But also I had in mind that he has some potential job in the background. Mm-hmm. He was extremely provocative, raging, arrogant in his behaving, like going straight into, you know, how much do you earn and things like that, you know, which is very, very, really unpleasant way. You know? And you're trying to get a rapport, not to get a kind of a confrontation. Mm-hmm. one of the things he mentioned we are not going to pay you like 1500s every time you're going to come over east to do some work for travel expenses and hotel and things like that. So it was that way he was trying to communicate. And then I tried to mentioned, and I put myself in a really defense position, you know, like a kind of a psychiatrist that just tried to listen and let him go with the conversation as long as possible, because if I was to confront him, he would probably suddenly just hang off. It was a cold call. In terms of when he mentioned a couple of times, he mentioned a few things, provocative things. So I was responding very kind of a with a little comment only, not approving completely what he's telling.
We lost Philip, or is it just me?
No, I've lost him on this end too. Philip, are you there? We kind of cut off. I see a question here, and I'm just going to read it out. Richard can answer it. So there's a couple issues happening here, obviously, as a lot of you have picked up on. And so the question he's asking here is, how would you structure an email to a difficult, intolerant project manager? And there is also some questions here about how would you respond to someone who's aggressively trying to fee shop you?
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds like there is an opportunity, but still it's a bit of a long shot. It's only a cold call, and you do live on the other side of Australia. So for those that don't know, where Philippe lives is Perth, and he's dealing with someone in Sydney, which is about an eight-hour flight. So the guy's probably thinking, listen, I don't want to pay for your airfares all the time, given I can probably hire a local architect in Sydney here. You've got my attention because you're a specialist in car yards, but so it's not without difficulty here, and it was a cold call. So I think you did reasonably well. I tell you what, though, you did write an email. So what Philip did was he went into the members area, and he found, I think it must have been Ian Robinson's email for an LCC that we've got in there. And I think, Philip, you have taken that email and you have adapted it for your situation and sent it. It's an excellent email. So if you haven't looked at it, what Philip said he did in this email, which I read earlier, was he tried to steer him away from design and jumping all the way to design, which this guy's obviously risk-averse and architect-averse and actually even people-averse by the sound of it. He doesn't particularly like people, which makes him a great project manager to be working with, doesn't it? And try and steer him away from selecting an architect to finish the job, if that's the case, into let's do some feasibility and preliminary work, which is the nature of the email that Philip sent, which I thought was a very good email. It might just be worth, we've got it there, you've got it on the tickets, Enoch, but it's in the Slack channel as well. Including a link to his response, which I thought, oh, there it is. His fee response was, I thought, very good. And obviously you're not going to be able to copy exactly what he's got here, but just go into the members area and both these things are available. Yeah, Bob Murphy says send him a Bon Voyage card. And I think a lot of people are saying that too. You know, you've got to ask yourself, is he an ideal client? Now, Philip said that on Perth, you know, where he is, the work's quite low. So, you know, just because someone's aggressive and angry and all that type of stuff doesn't mean they can't be a good client, and you've got to know your levels as well. But sometimes these people can be turned around, and if you need the work, sometimes you just have to, you know. But here's his fee proposal structure. Now, given it was a cold call, so, you know, he's doing his best here, but he says, hi, James, nice to talk to you today. Well, you're lying right off the bat, obviously. So he's not going to believe you because he knows no one thinks it's nice to talk to him. But anyway, here is our structured consultation as I've promised. From our discussion, it seems that you have several main concerns regarding your project. Remember, an email very similar to this is in the members vault area under LCC, under Ian Robinson's LCC email. Right, and he says, essentially, there is a limit to how much you're comfortable spending and you understandably want to stretch this as far as possible, but at the same time, you feel that you don't know what is actually feasible. Okay, so that's great. He's gaining rapport. He's showing that he understands him. It must be difficult for you feeling at this point you have to make some significant contribution to someone to design whilst not having the answers to some very basic questions, including 1, 2, and 3. So he's repeating back what he said, which is really, really important. This is really good rapport building structure here. When a designer started without answers to these questions, it almost always means significant design changes later on with time and cost overruns and the wrong assumptions included design fee proposals. Brilliant, right? textbook. Perhaps it's better at this stage to pause and thoroughly explore all your needs and options before proceeding any further with your design. Thinking about how I can be of most benefit to you at this point, what I can offer is to prepare a design report that will answer the questions above. This report will get you ready to move with whomever you choose to work with, compare fees, which is one of his big things, and it will help fill the gaps and avoid potentially expensive design changes later. Brilliant. The investment to thoroughly explore all your needs and options is at the cost of the standard feasibility study attached $1,400, and the cost of the airfare, I think it's airfare, isn't it? F-A-R-E, if you just want to change that, airfare only. So you are asking to pay your airfare plus the $1,400. I will waive the remaining cost of travel for you. In our structured consultation, you will receive all services and an outcome as described in our standard feasibility study, which is got attached below. The report will take 2 weeks to prepare. Thanks for your time today. I think that's an excellent email. I think it's still a long shot with this guy who's a bit of a loose cannon, but I think that's a very good effort, Philip. It's a very good email. I met some insurance agents, insurance financial services guys once, and they said when it comes to, you know, selling insurance is a pretty hard job as well, right? And they said what you want is highly emotional people, right? You want them either really, you want them highly emotional, because unless they're highly emotional, they're not going to do anything. As I talked about earlier with Samuel. You know, so if this guy's angry and aggressive and raging, it's because he cares. Something's not going right, you know? So if you can find out what's not going right and understand it and then address it for him, I mean, great. He's highly emotional, so he's probably highly decisive, right? So that's not necessarily a problem. But I think what you've done here is great. I would follow this up with a phone call again and ask why he's so emotional. Well, you know, you wouldn't say it like that, but, you know, what is it that's causing you the most pain in this situation? Then dig down like we did with Samuel before. You know, what's your biggest problem, you know? And then look to address that for him. You may have, you know, he may end up being a very big ally in the best case scenario. Everyone else is probably thinking, just dump the guy, right? But assuming we don't want to dump him, I think what you've done is great. But get close to him, find out what his pain is. He's angry, he's hurt, right? He's hurting. Perfect, right? He wants a solution. And who knows what the solution is? Who knows what he's angry about? But I dare say if you ask good questions, then you can find out and maybe you can help and be the architect for the $50 million project. If you want it, good luck. That may be great.
Awesome, Philip. Hope that helps. A couple of the members put in some things, some good comments here to keep in mind. Greg was saying, you know, ask the question, is he the gatekeeper? Obviously, you want to make sure before you engage this guy too much that he's, you know, you don't want to have the same conversation with the guy above him and the guy above him and the guy above him. So, you know, we are assuming, Richard and I are assuming that this guy is actually the gatekeeper here. And let's see.
Yeah, that's good. Really good question. And the question for that is, apart from you, you know, if it comes to getting on an architect on this project, apart from you, who else is involved in the decision-making process or the selection process? Who else needs to be involved? If it's a $50 million project, they're probably going to be a few people. So if you've got any chance, you need to know who all the people are and start communicating with all of them somehow.
Bob Murphy writes, I have turned a few obnoxious jerks into good clients, but it takes a lot of patience. That's right. And Greg says, two of my clients have been aggressive up front, and then when they make a cost decision, I never hear about that issue again. Okay, cool. Andy says, waiving, and this is something that jumped out at me too, waiving the remaining cost of travel sends a message of capitulation early in the negotiation. This is the sort of personality who will constantly seek to win by causing the other party to lose. Not my definition of a good client.
Yeah, it's all true. Great. It's all worth considering, definitely.
Jim asks, please repeat the location of this example email. We'll send out the, we'll include the link when we post this to the members area. We'll include the link to that email, but you'll find it within the members vault area of the Architect Marketing Formula training program or the Client Attraction System training, depending on which one you have access to. The vault, yep. All right, Lorenzo says, sometimes the worst initial impression has later been a very good client. Your offer is a very fair one. If he declines, so be it. If he accepts, that is your chance to meet him, learn enough about the client and product to know whether it's worth continuing. That's right. And, you know, concerning the airfare, really, if this guy's looking for the best facility, which I'm sure he is for his money, you know, anyone in their right mind, as long as you state it correctly, they're going to be willing to pay for an architect to fly across the country if you can state the value as to why you have that value. So something to keep in mind.
I've got, for those of you who haven't responded, there's a little training on differentiation that I'm just doing at the moment. And if you haven't registered, maybe we put the link for this, that we asked during the week, if you refer someone, we'll give you access to this training on how to differentiate yourself. So we'll find the link. Go and sign up for that. You have to link another person's email. You know, you have to invite another architect to get the training or something like that to get the training. Then you both get the training. But you know, it's our referral strategy. But I'm going to go through how to explain why an architect 7% say versus 10% of the project costs, why that's irrelevant. Okay, so it's a visual thing where you draw something for people. So I can't do it there, but yeah, get on that training for differentiation. We'll find the link and we'll pop it in there and go and refer someone to the architect marketing and get on that training on for differentiation and your friend.
Awesome. Hey, Philip, so I'm going to unmute you. It looks like we lost your sound a little bit, but unless you're still here online.
Yeah.
I think he's here online. Let's see.
And as John says, $50 million project, airfare is incidental. True, but if they don't know they even want the architect, you know, look, you do it once, I think. But bear in mind, John, he lives 5 hours away, and there are other architects in Sydney, presumably who would claim to be experts in car yards as well.
Yep.
So for the first one, maybe covers it.
So as Philip said, it's 5 a.m. in the morning over there, so you know, who knows what could have happened. He's offline right now, so.
He might have fallen asleep.
I know, you never know. All right. Okay, next question is up from Steve Nichol, who's taunting us from Cabo San Lucas right now. And he talks about a situation, and he says he's not mic'd up, so I'll go ahead and read this out. He says, we've gone through the 8 sales steps we talked about in last month's training. We've just had our first face-to-face meeting. The prospect has checked our website, and we've gotten excellent feedback. We've had a number of friendly emails back and forth. Rapport was good. They're a good fit for the kind of work we do. They know they're going to have to pay something, which is good, and we've agreed the next step is a design proposal. Here's the question. We would like to propose a fixed design fee, with an allowance for the grunt work, the CDs. Ideally, we would like to propose a fee about 10 to 15% higher than what they expect to pay. Can you give us some tips on how to ascertain what they expect to pay?
Yep. Well, I've got a couple, and then maybe Enoch has some. One is, I mean, obviously, ask them, you know, what's your budget? And I know every architect on the line, oh, they won't tell us. They always underdo it. They worry the architect will spend all their money if they... I know. But you can ask them, and you just ask them. So option one, you ask them and you say, listen, I need an accurate estimation because I can design for any level. You know, if you've only got this, then we design it to that. If it's that, obviously the design changes. But if you're only going to give me sort of 70% of your budget, I'll design it, and you won't be happy. So that's just have an honest conversation with them and ask them what their budget is. The other way is to say, to show them. So this is something some builders showed me, and they said it works really well because builders have the same problem, right? Everyone gives them a low price. So they're exactly the same story I hear with you guys. It happens with builders. People don't want to share, or they say too low. And so what this guy did, there was only one guy that had an answer to it. He said, I show them three pictures. I show them a low-end house, a medium one, a high-end house. And I go, here's the low-end, and this one will cost around this. Here's the medium pictures around this. Here's the high-end. This will cost around this. Where do you see your house fitting? And he says, they pick the house, knowing what they will cost. They go, well, I sort of see ourselves somewhere in the middle here. And they're kind of picking the price as well, but he knows that if they're in the middle, that's kind of where their budget is. They pick that house because that is kind of their budget, right? So, and he said that works for him every time. So that's a way of doing it. Maybe NXS has a different way.
Yeah, some of the clients I know, they would pick the one on the very far right, or I guess the most expensive one, and say, that's the house right there for us.
Yeah, but then they'd have to say, knowing what it costs, but we've really only, you know, we really probably have to fit in this one here. They couldn't just say, that's the house for us without saying, but we can't afford it.
Yep.
So you could show them a range of houses, you know?
Yeah, under that strategy, you know, I would put prices underneath the pictures, you know, because then there's figures there. They're going to see those figures. Look, what we're talking about here, can you give us some tips on how to ascertain what they expect to pay? Look, it could range all the way across the board, and I think you're going down the wrong path by, I'm just going to say it, by structuring your fees based upon what they expect to pay.
Oh, he's talking about the architecture fees.
Yep.
Yeah, of course he is. Oh, I see. Well, once again, that answer and that differentiation, it's irrelevant in some respects. Maybe I can draw one of the charts up here if you give me the thing, and I've got a pen I can draw on.
Yeah, I mean, I can switch it over. There is a whiteboard function here. If you have your, we can make you presenter here.
Give me a whiteboard.
You ready? I'll
give you. Yep.
It's in the GoToWebinar control panel, so I'm going to give you the screen. And then you'll see over in your controls, you should see something that looks like a little pen or a little marker icon.
Yeah, see the, yeah. Okay, I'm going to use the pen. All right. Am I going to do it over the screen here?
Yeah, we can turn black, so we see a black screen, so let's try.
Okay, so here's my theory on this, right? So let's say, you say, all right, architecture fees. Let's say someone is 7%, and let's say I'm a bit higher. I'm 10%. Oh. So okay, but yeah, a bit higher there. Now we've got to say what's the overall project going to cost. I've done this too big. I'll do it here. Don't worry about this. Here's what the project's going to cost in total. Now, it can be argued that because I specialize in this topic, it can be argued that I can actually bring it under because I know the contacts and I know how to negotiate for houses in this area. But let's say I'm a little bit higher even, just because of my fees are a little bit higher. So the overall project costs the same whether you're, you know, the cheaper architect or the more expensive. Now, the question that's really relevant here is what's the value of this project? Or, you know, and you can say value from usability point of view or value from what it's actually worth. Now, if you get a cheaper architect, the value, yeah, here's the total cost, right? The total cost goes from all the way there. Let's say the value could be, for an inferiorly designed, could be down here. Now, let's say the value for someone who's a specialist and knows how to do it, knows how to add value to this type of project, the total value of this project may be up here. Oh, sorry, I should have just done a line. Total value is up here. Right, now, the difference between that and that, and I've made that seems ridiculous, that's not the scale. That should seem really small when you're drawing this. But the difference between that and that is kind of irrelevant when we keep comparing the difference between this point and this point, right? So you're spending this much here to potentially get that. Now, obviously, this is going to be a lot smaller and it's going to be a lot bigger if I draw it to scale, but you get the point. So when you do this to scale, this looks irrelevant. That little bit extra lump here is kind of irrelevant when it's compared to this big thing here. Now, then your job is, okay, you've then got to you've changed the conversation to one about value and what is it worth and what's the usability value, how much more do you get when someone designs it who knows what they're talking about. So if you want the cheapest price, you get that, but you also get the least value. So we're trying to make that extra bit irrelevant. And it is kind of irrelevant, isn't it? Let's face it, everybody on this call knows it's irrelevant if the value is, like, you know, what's the ROI, what's the resale value, what's the functionality, all that type of stuff can be way higher from someone who knows what they're doing. So that is irrelevant, this little bit in here.
Good stuff. Everyone like that? Got some good comments here in the chat box. See, Greg says Wright's response was, do you really want a $5,000 house? Because most people want a $10,000 house for $5,000. Isn't that the truth? Troy asked, Richard, how do you consider ARC fees are paid from private pockets, but construction is paid by the bank or JV Capital? Yep, that's one thing that we do have to deal with for sure, Troy. Colin says, well put. And John says, how many times will you client be doing this project once? Important to get it right. That's right. All right, so going back to the question. So Richard gave an excellent, thanks for that instruction there. Richard gave an excellent example of the importance of, you know, showing that the delta, the difference between your fees and what they expect to pay might be very, very small. Ideally, we'd like to propose a fee of about 10 to 15% higher than what they expect to pay. Can you give us some tips on how to ascertain what they expect to pay? I don't have any secret mojo in that regard. I would probably just ask them. In my experience, if they haven't done projects before, a lot of times they're going to be way on the low side. Just because most clients, especially if they're homeowners, they have no idea what goes into designing architecture. So they're going to be like, yeah, I thought it was going to cost, you know, maybe $2,000 on the high end. And you'll be like, add 10% to that and you're $2,200, you know. So that, I hope that helps. Steve, you're a savvy guy, and I'm sure you're going to figure something out. So let us know how this goes. Look, here's what you said. You're quoting what the realtors say, buyers are liars. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I do know that real estate agents deal with this kind of stuff all the time. So she says they have enough money. All right. Right, right, right. Buyers are liars. Right. So the idea that, oh, we don't have that much money, trying to, you know, beat people down on their fees. Right. I get it. Okay. We've checked the prospect out on LinkedIn and have checked out his company and position. Prospect is probably making at least in the six figures, but as typical in our market, not flaunting any wealth. So here's the deal. If you make them want it badly enough, they'll buy it. I mean, that's the honest to goodness truth. I mean, even if they're making six figures, if they can qualify for the loan, they will qualify for it. And, you know, I mean, when I go to other countries, I used to live in Honduras for a while, Panama, even here in the United States, you know, I mean, you see people walking around with phones more expensive than I own. And, you know, enough said, you know, it's like it just depends on where your priorities are. You know, they might live in a small hovel, but they have a big screen TV. You know, it's just, what are their priorities? What do they want to spend their money on? So,
that's true. We're doing a renovation at the moment. Well, we're about to, and my wife's dealing with it all, and she's going to all the suppliers. Listen, I don't want to pay that. I don't want to. You know, she's the, you know, the builder and the plumber and the electrician and all that type of stuff, and she's getting them all down. They're all kind of capitulating and going, oh, yeah, okay. Well, we've used them before, and we can afford all of it if we wanted to. None of it we can't afford. But, of course, we don't want to pay for a wiring job for $5,000. You know, the quote was $5,000, now he's going to do it for $3,000. You know, we had a quote for the painting inside the house for $14,000. Now we're going to get it done for $3,000. But, you know, If it's a job which someone can do and we can't, you know, we'd pay for it because we're going to do it. But I listen to her on the phone and all the things she's saying, you know, I just can't afford to pay this. All that. Well, that's not true. You know, we can, but if we perceive the painter to be a commodity item, then we'd rather pay $3,500 or $4,000 than $14,000, of course. But, you know, with architecture, you know, if you can position yourself as someone that can't be, is not interchangeable, yeah, we'll pay for it. And we don't know what the costs are for all these things. You know, we think they might be this, but once we hear what they are, it's like, okay, as long as we want it, as Enoch says, as long as we want it, that's what we'll pay.
All right, I'm going to jump over here to another question. Thanks, Steve, for putting that in. It's a fabulous question. This one comes in from Romero, who's based out of the Silicon Valley area. He asks, says, followed our advice. Congratulations, Romero, on taking action. First of all, big round of applause for taking action. All right, took some action, and check it out. One of the biggest newspaper in San Jose, the Mercury News, picked up the story. This is fabulous, so I just pulled up that interview here, and I know you guys can't see my screen. Sorry about that. Let me just throw that up here. Just a second. Oh, are you seeing my screen? Maybe you are.
Yeah, we can see.
Okay, cool. All right, that is good to know. All right, so here we go. Cool, so a church was destroyed by fire, and here's an article talking about how it's being rebuilt, and it has a quote here from Romero of Topa Architecture. Very, very cool. So a question that Romero's asking is, how do I leverage this?
All right, well, I'll give a couple of quick, but Enoch can probably even answer it better. Obviously, you could put it on your website. You can include the fact you've been reviewed in your newsletter that goes out to your Dirty 30. So you could insert a copy into your newsletter. If you have meetings with clients and things like that, before you have meetings with clients, you could send it as part of your information pack, as part of the indoctrination before you go to that first meeting to position you right. It could be a link, maybe, or if you didn't use it that way, it could be a link to that article about you that goes in an email as part of the, you know, let me tell you a little bit about us, about Romero. Enoch, you've probably got a lot more fancier ideas than that.
Some fancier ideas. Mark Siddle said, I noticed you're advertising to yourself. Does anyone see the...
That's right. Well, I get it all the time. My kids get it. And they go, why? Well, you know, why? Why?
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know, did you mention the tear sheet idea? It's fantastic. No. I mean, there's a lot of ways, Romero. This is great. You know, this is great. Look, what does it do to be quoted in the newspaper? Let's just back up for a second, right? What it gives you is it gives you instant credibility. All right, to a certain degree, right? A certain amount of trust. Because here's how it goes, right? If you say something about yourself, there's usually quite a bit of skepticism there, right? If I say, Enoch, I'm this great guy, you know, you'll be like, I don't know about that, Enoch. You know,
always sounds better coming from someone else, doesn't it?
That's right, right? So if Richard says Enoch is a great guy, so if I get a testimonial from Richard saying, man, that guy Enoch is a real swell chap, he's a good mate, we hung out at Disneyland, he laughed at all my jokes, then, you might say, okay, maybe this Enoch guy isn't half bad. If someone sees it printed, especially from a news or media outlet, where they are quoting you as an expert or someone authority or someone who's involved in a process, then it's true. It's no longer opinion. It's true. And we're seeing that all across the news nowadays, right? If people see it on the web, if they see it on social media, if they see it wherever, it's got to be scripture because it is true, right? So,
and that's with the exception of political stuff.
We're starting to wise up to that. Yeah, yeah. This is changing. This is changing over time. All right. Cool. Well, you know, the other funny thing is, as I'm on this webpage, you can see the other websites that I'm, like, looking at. I was looking at some designer desks, so those are popping up here. I'm looking at these, you know, these guys always follow me around. I don't know why I'm seeing this story about Hill and Berkeley. Anyways, let's go back to the question here. So, Romero, you know, just a really quick thing is I would have all the local churches on your mailing list. I would get those people on a database, get their names, get the names of the people who are in charge of facilities. The people who are in charge of whatever, if it's a committee, if it's a pastor, if it's a diocese or whatever it is, you know, the bishop, You know, you want to get those people on your mailing list. And that I, what I would do is I would just print out copies. So order 500 copies of the newspaper, whatever. They don't even need to get the newspaper. You can photocopy the article. Just send it to them, and you can just scribble a little note on there saying, hey, this is from Romero. Just, you know, Catholic Church Diocese over here, they're having this really great project. You know, just a little note, say, hey, this is what's going on. If you want to talk about your project, you know, here's my number. Or even better than that, Romero, hopefully you have a monkey's fist that you can direct them to. Hey, if you'd like my report on 7 mistakes to avoid in your next sanctuary building, you know, text this number, call me, whatever, the call to action, right? So
that's a couple ideas. Or I'm just thinking, or include the article, but send a letter saying, hey, you know, if you're interested, on a short report I wrote about the 10 surprising things we learned when renovating Holy Cross Church, you know, do this. I've created a short retort report on the 10 most, yeah, the 10 most interesting things, or the 10 most surprising things that we learned renovating Holy Cross Church.
Yeah, that's a great point, Richard. People love case stories. They really love case stories. So if you case studies, if you position this as a case study, because one thing it does say in the article here is let's see, where does it say? Because I read this. It said that, where was it? Torres did not disclose the total cost for the church, which was fully insured. So you could mention that, you know, hey, by the way, I notice if you read the article, you'll see that I didn't disclose how much it costs. That's because of, you know, confidentiality. But there are some other very interesting things that happened during the project that I'm sure you'd like to know about, you know. Do this to get my report, like Richard said, on the 10 things that I learned, that the church learned going through this process of restoring. So that's one way to do it. Just send it out to everyone. That's the first thing I look at. You know, make sure you include, if we go to your website, hopefully this is right, Romero, that looks good, there we go. I would include some media icons along the bottom of where you've been featured. So that's another thing you can do. You know, you've been in the San Jose Mercury News. You can say as featured in, or as mentioned in, or whatever you feel comfortable saying, and then boom, 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 put some different media icons down there. I know it's just a little thing, and sometimes they seem cheesy, but believe it or not, when people see that, subconsciously, it's just adding to the, what do you say, the cachet. Adding to the cachet. Mm-hmm. All right. Yep. And Lee makes an excellent point here. Look into some joint marketing with the contractor as well. That's a great point. So you could basically give that article to the contractor along with the little letter that kind of pumped up the contractor's work on that, and say, hey, you, let's send this out to all of your contacts, right? All of your past clients, to show them, oh, by the way, the architect was mentioned in this article, but assuming that you and the contractor get along great and everything went well, you know, what you can do is come to the contractor and say, hey, look, I was mentioned this article here on this project we're doing together. I noticed they left you out. I hate to see that, because I don't know if they left you out or not. I mean, I didn't notice the contractor was mentioned here. But in any case, you could just say, you know, I really think that you deserve a ton of credit here. You're going to build this project, which is huge. I'd love to, you know, let's put together a little flyer, brochure, some sort of marketing collateral that we can send out to your contacts to let them know about what you're doing here at the church. And of course, Romero, you're this like the Trojan horse, right? You're the Greeks who are going to, you know, kind of hidden inside of that little marketing package that goes out with the contractor. So that's what Lee's referring to when he says doing some joint marketing. Melena says, frame the article and have it behind you during your pictures and videos. Viewers may not be able to read it, but will see that you have been in the news. That's great. If you ever watch Grant Cardone, so he's a sales trainer. He has a reality TV show, and he has his own YouTube channel where he does live, you know, live broadcasts a couple times a week, I think. But anyways, he does that great. He's written a couple best-selling books. And so if you look at him when he's on air, he has these gigantic posters behind him of his different books that he's written, you know, the 10X Factor, you know, all the, I don't even remember the names of them, you know, the Millionaire Handbook over here, and they're just big, and you're just continually being reminded that of that credibility. So that's a good point, Melina. That's good. Okay, so do we have any other questions here that we didn't get to? Yeah, Romero says, I also invited the mayor, and he attended. He is standing next to me behind the bissup. Oh, very cool. Let's see. I missed that. Let's see. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, there's Romero. There he is right there. So there's Romero, and I don't know which guy is the mayor, if he's this guy or this guy here, but that's cool. Way to go. Way to go to make this a community event. Well done, Romero. Congratulations. All right. Richard, do we have any announcements? Well, that's anticlimactic.
Well, you spring it on me. Just jump on there. There'll be some good training for the differentiation, which is all sort of helps with a lot of the questions that are here. So refer someone to the Architect Marketing Institute, and you'll both get access to that training. That's the only announcement I have.
Cool. Richard is going to be flying up here in about a week.
Oh, yes.
Right, Richard? So we're going to be going, we're having 3 times a year we meet with our mastermind members in person. Who are our mastermind members? Well, they're the people who we work with personally to help them build out their marketing and sales systems for their architecture firms. We're going to be getting together in the Bahamas at the end of this month, but the reason why I'm telling you this is because before we go to the Bahamas, we have rented a room at a hotel, a conference room, in Miami. And we, Richard and I, are going to be hosting a little workshop there for 10 firms where we're going to be helping you develop your own marketing and sales system. So we'll tell you, we'll map out all the pieces that will go into it. We have a spot for 2 firms left, I believe. Pretty sure we have 8 that we've already booked in. I think we have 2 more spots left. So be on the lookout for that. If you want to come join us in Miami for one day, the date is... That is going to be on the February the 21st, just a Tuesday. And, hey, if you're someplace where it's snowing right now, let me tell you, Miami is not a bad place to get away for a couple days. All right, so if you do want to jump in on that, you can just go to, I think the web address is Architect Marketing Workshop. Yeah, architectmarketingworkshop.com. You go to that, and then there's an application form where you can apply and get additional details. So there you go. So it's architectmarketingworkshop.com. All right. Bob says, freezing rain in Toronto. Sounds like fun. Mark says, when you come into the UK, Mark, as soon as you get together a group big enough for us to present to you, we're there. We're there. And Mark has a question about the training. Oh, the training. Richard, your differentiation training. Got to get on that. Okay. Richard says, I'm on it. I'll get that up. Okay, cool. All right, well, we want to thank everyone for being on today's Office Hours calls. As always, get out there, conquer the world. Look, there's so much opportunity right now, and just the fact that you're investing in yourself, learning sales and marketing, changing your psychology and your mindset is just going to pay huge dividends in the future. So fantastic. All right. Rizwan Ahmad already says yes for the UK visit, please. So we already have one up there. Mark, you can add him to your list. And Mark will...
There's a lot of people have asked about the UK. It's a hell of a long way away, though. It's like, yeah, if we're in the neighborhood, yeah, but not if we're in the neighborhood. I used to go there playing cricket, but we will do it. We will do it, but yeah. It's a long way to go to have 5 people in the room if our marketing's...
Yeah, we'll talk to Mark. Mark, if you can get us together a group, we can make something happen. And you can... Okay, Mark says, get yourself over here, Petrie.
Up to Durham.
That's right. Durham, the home of Mr. Siddle. All right, thanks everyone. Thanks, Mark. I just want you guys to know Mark Siddle has been, he was part of our original coaching group that shoots 3 or 4 years ago now. So Mark is an expert marketer. Same with Steve. Steve asked a pretty advanced question earlier in this call. Cool. Greg, thanks for the good analysis. It's good to hear what others are dealing with and how they have peeled the onion and then cooked it. Do you prefer sautéed or boiled? All right. Okay, Richard, we'll catch you on the next marketing training. Talk to y'all later.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you.